Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 scores scope. Yep,
where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know.
No.
I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, got you.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Matt Peck is out today. You've got me, just me. So I figured we'd talk a little bit about the NBA playoffs, talk a little bit about former Chicago Bull who's lighting it up, had a career night yesterday, and also take a couple of your voicemails. Again, 331-979-1369, the place to drop your voicemails if you want to be a part of the conversation. So first, let's talk a little bit about Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler dropped 40 last night. 40 on the Bucks, who everybody, even throughout the 3 or 4 month shutdown, and even going into the restart, the Bucks were the heavy favorite to come out of the East. And as much as people talked about the Heat being a team that maybe could give some teams some trouble, I don't think people actually took them quite seriously. I know they won 66 games this year. Believe me, I get that. They won 66 games. Good for Jimmy Butler. Good for Bam Adebayo. Good for Eric Spoelstra. We'll talk about why that has even more interesting implications in a little bit. But damn, man, you had to watch Butler at age 30 drop 40 on Giannis, and the Bucks look lost, man. I've been saying it even though they scrapped out the Magic win. The three-point shooting goes away. The shooting in general goes away, and you got Giannis missing half his free throws yesterday, getting in early foul trouble. All of that is cause for huge concern. Once again, though, who are your reliable shooters? Yeah, you've got Chris Middleton, and Brook Lopez shot pretty well yet last night, but Wesley Matthews and George Hill, Pat Connaughton off the bench, Dante DiVincenzo off the bench, like at some point those dudes are not going to cut it. And I was watching them play too. They were trying to match the Heat at one point in their small ball, and every time the Bucks went small and so did the Heat tied the game or the Heat took the lead, and Giannis would have to come right back into the game, and it kind of stalemated what the Bucks were trying to do. It just wasn't working, so the Bucks are going to have to figure out a way to combat that small ball lineup and the plethora of three-point shooting that they have. But it's brought up a conversation among Bulls fans. Again, what are we, over 3 years since the Jimmy Butler trade to Minnesota? And it still has brought up some sour taste from a lot of Bulls fans that were adamantly against the rebuild and wanted Jimmy Butler to stay here. I will always say, and I'm free and willing to admit and admitted it a million times on this show, I was in favor of the rebuild. I was in favor of the rebuild. I was in favor of the trade. And that wasn't because I didn't think that the Bulls could win with Jimmy Butler. I thought that they could. I just never thought that the Bulls were going to pay anybody to keep Jimmy here and keep Jimmy happy and actually compete. Think about who they spent their money on. Think about all the drama that was attached to that. Not even the Dwayne Wade Rondo stuff. Go back the year prior to that. All the drama that was attached to whether or not the Bulls were going to pay Butler, whose team this actually was. The getting rid of Noah and Rose was a sign of a lot of things ending in a weird transition period where the Bulls either had to say, okay, Butler's our new guy, this is what we're going to do for the next 5-6 years, or hit the reset button. The Dwayne Wade Rondo transition clearly didn't work, so they had to make a decision. It's up to you guys, but I don't think where the Bulls were headed would have put Jimmy Butler in the best situation to win, at least here in Chicago. You know the front office and Jerry Reinsdorf wasn't going to spend the money. And listening to the way that they wanted to pay Jimmy Butler and once again lowball him, and they didn't want to give Jimmy Butler what he was worth. But again, people salty that said, oh, you know, everybody casted Jimmy Butler as the bad guy the last couple of years that he was here. And some people did. I do agree with that. But there's also fair criticism that went on Jimmy Butler when he was here towards the end. And I think some of his teammates, too, that played with him, especially that last year, said some critical things about him. But that, not taking anything away from Butler, because I think he's a star. And he is. He's proving it. He's proving he can take a Heat team with a competent coach, a coach who should have won Coach of the Year, and pushing forward with a 1-0 series lead against that Bucks team is insane. But I don't know. It's hard for me to look back. Like, even looking back on this weird Boylan era after we get into actually some new Bulls basketball, it's going to be tough for me to, like, re-drag up all of those memories because it's so awful to think about as a Bulls fan. But I'm curious if any of your thoughts have crossed your mind over the last couple of days, whether or not you wish the Bulls would have kept Jimmy Butler and figured out a way to pay him and figure out a way to put a team around him. It's still kind of meddled in mediocrity. And what if everything else went the same way that it did? Would the East have opened up for 2 or 3 years? Would a lot of the teams decide to... Would KD still decide to go to the Nets? Would Kyrie still decide to go to the Nets? Would all these moves be being made? Would Kawhi stay... Would he have stayed in Toronto even if the Bulls would have kept him an additional year after signing with Toronto there? Like, there's a bunch of moving pieces, and the East could have been pretty stacked even with the Bulls having Butler. Or it opens up again. There's a lot of factors, a lot of dominoes, I think, that have to fall in place for the Bulls to be a top four team with Butler, them paying him long term. Then you also have to think about, too, are the Bulls really equipped to keep Jimmy Butler healthy and in a prime situation like he is with the Heat? History tells us no. My opinion's no. He clearly had some problems in Minnesota, too. He clearly had some problems with the Sixers. He just needed to find an organization that was willing to buy all into what Jimmy Butler's philosophy was. And the Heat are the perfect place to do that. Before I let you guys hear from Vinny Goodwill, I thought he had some good thoughts on not only Butler, because he was here around... He was covering the Bulls every single day for NBC Sports Chicago while Butler was still here. So he had some opinions on that. But he also brought up a couple of head coaching names that some of our listeners have thrown out at us over the last couple of days. And I'll be completely honest, I don't know very much about any of these guys. So take it from somebody that actually has some connections, actually has some knowledge of these coaches that could be a candidate for the Bulls' next head coach job. And we'll talk about situations in which maybe we look at certain candidates with certain criteria than others, considering the Bulls' history. Before we hear from Vinny Goodwill and also take your voicemails and text messages, I want to let you guys know about Rock Auto. RockAuto.com is a fantastic sponsor of the Locked On Podcast Network and the Locked On Bulls podcast. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same exact parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, let's hear from Vinny Goodwill. First, let's go to Jimmy Butler, and then I will bring up the couple of coaching candidates that he listed off earlier today with Dan Bernstein on 670 The Score. So here he is talking about why Jimmy Butler is having so much success with the Heat, and I thought this was perfectly put.
The entire Bulls organization being done with each other, from the front office to the coach, from the coach to the players, to the players to the players, you know, that was sort of how things end. You know, in Chicago, usually things end with Michael Jordan hoisting up a championship trophy and riding off into the sunset. But usually in sports, more times than not, that game against Cleveland was how situations end, whether it's with a championship or not. So when everything else derives from that, you know, Jimmy Butler is 30 years old now, and he's going through different stops. He's no different than he was before. He may be a little bit more mature and a little bit more experienced than, but the fact that he's with someone that appreciates him, that speaks his language, that mirrors his language, that mirrors his intention, and doesn't, you know, parse what he says or, you know, takes the volume of what he says. They take the intention. They take where it's coming from. They can absorb it. You know, Eric Spoelstra once told me, Jimmy's loud, so are we. You know, he was saying all these different things that people say about Jimmy, they say about us. And he said that with a hint of pride, with a lot of pride. And some organizations can't handle that. And Miami is an organization that prides itself on being a championship organization, on going for it, on having those championship expectations. When you have Jimmy Butler in your locker room, when you have him in your organization, he is the ultimate mirror. Whatever you got going on, he's going to say it, whether it's to the public, whether it's to the media, whether it's to, you know, everybody in that building. So your house had better be in order. And the Heat are a franchise that they don't mind that because they do that self-evaluation just as much as he does.
It's an interesting 90 seconds there from Goodwill. And I'm wondering if he was told, because if you think about Butler's time here in Chicago, did you feel like he was a mirror here in Chicago? Maybe towards the end, maybe the last 2 years in terms of speaking out and willing to talk to people. But I'm always curious. I'm wondering when that switch flipped for Butler, in what part of that dynasty, it wasn't not a dynasty, what part of that era of Bulls did all of a sudden the switch flip and he started to talk to people and he started to let people know things were going not the way they should for a professional organization here in Chicago. And look, he had those similar challenges in Minnesota too. Vinny Goodwill keeps talking about the idea of having this championship pedigree, and the Bulls had that to some extent. But then all of a sudden, when the winning went away and the injuries happened and the mistakes with the roster and mistakes with contracts and trades and secrecy and lies, when all of that stacked up and started to happen consecutively over years, Jimmy Butler started to look around at this organization and said, hey, this isn't the place that I was drafted to. This wasn't the mentality any of us had here. Like, what are we doing here? Gets traded up to Minnesota. Minnesota doesn't have championship aspirations. They probably do, but they don't have that type of mindset. Not a small market, not with a team that hadn't made the playoffs in what was it, 11, 12 years since Kevin Garnett was there? And then you get moved to Philly, who struggled to do anything besides get past the first round. I mean, it had been the process for what, almost half a decade? And so Philly, while maybe going back further in their history, have some type of championship pedigree, they didn't have any semblance of saying, hey, we had been there before. This is what we're about. Here's what we're doing. None of that was in place there. And he struggled. He struggled to find his fit there. Then he goes to Miami. We know what Miami's about. They're about winning championships, taking and picking the right opportunities to find the best window for a championship. And they've done this multiple times. Granted, they had Dwayne Wade for his entire career, basically his entire career. You got LeBron James and Chris Bosh, and you had that dynasty. But now you've built it up and back since Dwayne Wade has left, and you acquired Jimmy Butler. And now you've added young, talented pieces and a lot of depth and a really smart head coach to that franchise. And instead of hiding what Jimmy Butler is saying and the frustrations and not embracing who Jimmy Butler was, like the Bulls didn't and like Minnesota didn't and like the Sixers didn't, the Heat finally are doing that. And it's paying positive results. You get 66 wins and you get a 1-0 lead against the best team in the East. Props to Jimmy Butler. I give him all the credit in the world. I'm excited for him, and I'm glad he's having success. He's only 30, and he's balling out, so we'll see if he continues to do that. You can drop your thoughts, 331-979-1369, or on Twitter, at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Our first question came from Twitter, just asking about assistant Miami Heat coach Dan Craig. Dan Craig's not a name that you probably know. Most people listening to this podcast don't know him outside of maybe a rumor or an article that you've read in the last 24, 48 hours, hearing him attached to the Bulls interviewing him and being a part of this coaching candidate list. Here's Goodwill on Dan Craig and what he thinks about him, what he's heard from the league about Here's Vinny Goodwill on what he thinks and what he's heard about Dan Craig and how he could be a possible potential head coach for the Bulls.
I've heard a lot of positive things about Dan Craig over the past couple of years. Not necessarily that he was looking to be a head coach, but just from that Spoelstra, I'm going to say I hate saying tree, you know, but from that Spoelstra, Pat Riley, Worker Bee, tree, I've heard so many good things about him. I think the thing with the Bulls is, Dan, that we have to take into account is they're not the only head coaching vacancy. Right. And they're probably a little bit lower on the list when you consider some of the other franchises that have openings or will have openings, you know, by the time, you know, everything plays out. Houston could have an opening. We know Indiana has an opening, which could be filled by the coach occupying the Houston chair now. Brooklyn has an opening. You know, there's so many other, you know, franchises that have attracted things off of Philadelphia, although I think that's an insane asylum. I would take Chicago over Philadelphia, but that's just me. But other people are going to look at these other franchises, and if you're the Bulls, you have to shake every tree. You have no excuse. Then basically, look, what else do you have to do right now? You're not in the bubble. We don't know when the draft is going to be. You can work out players virtually and everything else and interview guys via Zoom. So you don't have to worry about, you know, divvying up your resources, you know, from your scouting staff to evaluating college players and looking at stuff and everything else. You can devote a lot of your attention towards everything that you need to handle right now. And we do know the Bulls' forte about hiring first-time head coaches. I think Scott Skiles, the only one that was not a first-time head coach in professional basketball that they've hired in the Jerry Reinsdorf era. If that's the case, then, you know, I don't know how that votes for Kenny Atkinson, although I think Kenny Atkinson brings a certain level of discipline and structure and order that is, you know, I won't say is needed because I feel like they have, you know, quote unquote structure and order with law and order Boylan, but it just didn't work out well.
He just had to get the Boylan comment in there. But he does bring up a good point. Where does the Bulls' job rank among the open jobs right now? Is New Orleans better? Is Houston potentially better? Is Indiana better? Is Philadelphia better? Is Brooklyn better? Those are five jobs right now I can think of off the top of my head that are free, that need head coaches and need it immediately. Where do the Bulls land? Somewhere in the middle? If you're middle of the pack there, or maybe you're second to last, I don't think the Bulls are the worst job. I don't think it's the most difficult job. You've got a pretty decent roster. The best head coach available is probably taken off already in terms of best veteran head coach, and that's Tom Thibodeau. But yeah, I mean, think about it. That's another factor, bringing up the idea that the Bulls don't normally hire veteran head coaches. So you're looking at somebody that's going to have first-time coaching experience and have to make those same types of mistakes we've seen early and often with other guys. And Tom Thibodeau was a different case with him being his first-time head coach here. He stepped right into the role and was ready to go. You don't normally see that from other guys. We didn't see that with Vinny Del Negro. We didn't see that with Fred Hoiberg. Fred Hoiberg went, 500? And he had two playoff appearances. But again, still had Jimmy Butler. But again, yeah. Nobody with any experience, maybe outside of Skiles, like Vinny had mentioned. So that's something else to keep in the back of your mind. Will the Bulls go a route where they hire a veteran guy like they don't normally do and change history again and shake things up? Or they won't again trust the faith in a brand new perspective and give somebody their first opportunity and hope that that guy is your key to success over the next, 10 years? And maybe Dan Craig can be that guy. The one note that I did find on Dan Craig that I thought was interesting was, in 2016, he won D-League Coach of the Year, and he also won the D-League Championship. Other coaches to do that of recently were Nick Nurse in 2012. He won D-League Coach of the Year. Now we know where he's at. Eric Musselman, who's now the head coach at University of Arkansas, he won it back in 2014. And Jerry Stackhouse, who was a name that we talked about last year, even prior to Boylan. And now he's the head coach of Vanderbilt. So a lot of good things moving. And as soon as he won the championship there and won Coach of the Year, he immediately joined Spoelstra's bench again. The Bulls aren't going to be the only spot looking to interview him. So anybody coming from that Heat organization knows what championships are about. And clearly has the work ethic. If you are good enough to work under Eric Spoelstra and you've got enough talent to win in the G League and pull that together, there's other coaches with the exact same resume and are on successful paths. Got other coaches that have been in that same spot and just needed to be given an opportunity. Maybe the Bulls give Dan Craig an opportunity. Here's a little bit more on a couple other head coaches' possibilities for the Bulls, including assistant Mavs coach and associate head coach Jamal Mosley.
I know that he is a worker. You know, I know that he is. He comes very highly recommended from some of the better older coaches in the league that have been around him. He's an African American who's paid his dues. And we know that there's a dearth of those coaches in the league. Now there's five. And if you're looking, not necessarily looking at a black coach or something like that, I don't want it to be, you know, in that way, Dan. You know, I don't operate like that. But if you're looking for someone to, quote-unquote, have the, you know, relatability to be able to connect with your players, because clearly there's been a disconnect from your last two coaches.
It's a good point. I think discipline is something that they're going to need, but it needs to be a voice that the guys trust. Like, if you have discipline, you know where it's coming from. Boylan had the discipline, but he did it the cartoonish way with no pedigree to back him. He didn't have championship rings to back him. He didn't have any type of winning record to back him. He was a first-time head coach and an ass-kisser. That's what he had to back him. He wasn't a Greg Popovich. Eric Spoelstra had to prove himself, too. All of these guys that have gotten first chance opportunities have had to prove themselves and had a reason for guys to buy in. And doing it the cartoon way with no resume for anybody to have faith in you is not the way that they need to do it. So I think that there is some order, some discipline, some routine thing that needs to be brought in and established and continued to be established over the next several years. I mean, because this seesawing back and forth between coaches, even if you do get a new front office, it just doesn't work. It's you need some type of stable environment for people to succeed. It's just the way that life works. You need some type of stabilization in order to have some type of success. And I think a lot of these young players know that. And you're in a critical spot where you've got three or four guys that are sitting right on that line where it could be, hey, this guy still has a chance. You've got a chance to really take advantage and develop him, and he goes through the ceiling. And then the other side of it is we spent too much time trying to figure out who the head coach was going to be. He got three different playbooks jammed down his head and in his mind in the last three seasons, and we've completely lost him, and we've completely lost his confidence. I'm hoping that's not the case, but it's another good point. Is somebody that's going to come bring discipline but also listen and connect with their players. One more candidate is Minnesota's associate head coach in James Vanderpool.
Because he's a little bit more experienced. He was in Portland for a while. Just because someone hasn't been a head coach doesn't mean that they're not experienced. And I think that's the thing that we have to be very careful about. If they go with a first-time head coach, if you've been in different organizations, if you've been able to take different things, yeah, there's a difference between sliding, you know, 12 inches over, right? There's clearly a big difference in directing an organization and being able to handle that every day. But he has a wealth of experience that he just hasn't been given the opportunity. Now, you can say perhaps he hasn't wanted it. Perhaps he's been more, you know, invested in sort of the skill guys and everything else, that type of thing. But I've heard nothing but really good things.
And then finally, to wrap up, here's what he's hearing about the overall search, at least in the beginning here. And this is still in the beginning stages, and I don't think they're going to name a head coach for a couple weeks, at least. We'll see if the Bulls are one of those teams that wants to come to do voluntary workouts. I think that they would want to, especially some of these players who haven't played in 6 months. But here's how he thinks here's how he is at least hearing the coaching search is going for the Bulls so far.
I'm actually impressed with the list that the Bulls have come up with thus far, because they're not limiting it to their own sort of, oh, I know this guy type of thing, which we've seen before. You know, I think they're open to listening to things that they don't know, people they don't know. Of course, relationships play a big part in this, Dan, but you have to be willing to listen to other people's evaluations of how you do things with your organization. If nothing else, you're going to get honest evaluations of your personnel from all these other different candidates who are going to say, this is what we said about Lauri Markkanen. This is what we said about Zach LaVine. This is what we saw from Coby White and Wendell Carter. And then those blanks that you don't necessarily have filled in, these other guys, even if you don't hire them, can fill them in for you because they know your personnel from the other scouting reports from the league, from the other coaches and other teams in the league.
It's going to get fascinating the next couple of weeks as the Bulls continue to interview and interview and interview. And that's a discussion I think Matt and I need to have over the next several weeks is where do the Bulls rank in terms of best job available and how does that put them at an advantage or a disadvantage compared to some of these other teams? And also with their history too, how do we know that they're not still going to pick the guy that's a first-time head coach? And that's not necessarily a negative either. But it also limits your pool to an extent. Like Vinny was talking about with Kenny Atkinson. That basically takes him completely out of it. Interesting. Give me your thoughts. 331-979-1369 on Twitter at LockedOnBulls, at Jordan C. Melly, and at Bulls_Peck. I didn't have enough time to do the voicemails. I'll stick these. We've got a lot of voicemails, so we might do one or two episodes just dedicated to those. But you'll get Matt and I back on the mics tomorrow, and we'll do some of those voicemails, maybe mix it up and do a bit of those on Friday. But if you want to get your thought across, your question, you've got a comment, just any of the thoughts on anything we've been talking about the last couple of days, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Again, on Twitter, at Bulls_Peck, at Jordan C. Malley, and at LockedOnBulls. For Jordan Malley and my partner Matt Peck, we are saying we are out of here. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
I want to hear that from you.
Break.
Yeah. Sure. Nice of you to show up.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com